Trader Cobb Crypto Podcast. This is the Trader Cobb Crypto Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Trader Cobb Crypto Show. I have another amazing guest today, but before we do that, I just want to let you know that this is sponsored by TraderCobb.com. So jump across to the website, TraderCobb.com, where you can get all your crypto trading education needs. Plenty of free stuff there too, guys. So amazing guest today with Neeraj Murarka. And look, I'm really stoked to have him on board because, look, he's the co-founder and the CTO of a project that I've been keeping an eye on for a little while and want to know more. Bluezell. Now, some of you may have heard him speak in different parts of the world. I know he was there at Consensus when I was there, and I have read and looked and watched a great deal of content out there from this gentleman. So thank you so much for being on the show today, mate.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Really happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, look, I guess the first thing to do to touch on really is if you could just give us a little bit of an introduction on yourself and look really why Bluezell has come about and you know, how you got to this point that you are now, really.
Sure. I mean, you know, I started the company in 2014 with my co-founder. We were based here in Vancouver, and we were originally interested in the problem of remittance. Basically, we observed that the Indo-Canadian community here in Canada had a problem. If they wanted to send money back home to India, it was expensive. You know, they had to resort to things like Western Union or wire transfers, both of which are not optimal. So we wanted to build a payment system using decentralized / blockchain technologies. And we originally built our payment systems using Ripple, which most of us have heard of. Since then, we moved the company in 2016 to Singapore, and we've changed the focus a fair bit. You know, we went into enterprise, we built KYC, which is Know Your Customer. We built an enterprise KYC product, which was using Ethereum. And that's when really the, you know, the big kind of light bulb went off that, you know, there wasn't really a decentralized database that was available that used the best of decentralized technology and was there, you know, for decentralized apps, but also for non-decentralized apps. And that's kind of what was the genesis where, We wrote the white paper and began working on what is our biggest project right now, our Bluezell database, and that's where we're at right now. And that's generally my focus day to day.
Okay, and I mean, look, effectively, just to sort of crunch that a little bit, you're basically a data sharing company based on a decentralized data sharing company, and so that people can make sense of that, what that effectively is right now we've got our data sharing, which is in the cloud. Now the cloud is owned by corporations. It's I think we spoke just before this, Neeraj, about the cloud and how it was sort of the second internet, the first internet being the commerce internet, the .com, that sort of stuff, the second internet being the cloud computing, and the third internet being this decentralized blockchain type of world. Now, what's the benefit for somebody like myself, okay, just a normal human being who has data, who uses data? How can I benefit from using Bluezell, both either by being somebody who, you know, rents the space on my computer, and I'll ask you to elaborate a bit about that and tell the listeners, and also somebody who, you know, may wish to access it in another area?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you know, the Web 2.0 paradigm, as you mentioned, is where we currently are at in the world with the cloud. And, you know, it works really well. You've got companies like Amazon and Microsoft that have cloud data centers, and they own those servers, and your data seems relatively safe there. But as you can see with, you know, privacy laws coming through with GDPR and, you know, leaks such as the ones we've heard about in the past year or so, there's some serious problems with the cloud. So what we've been doing with Web 3.0 is what I consider the next generation. We call it fog computing, or, you know, decentralized, which people have heard of more. And really what it comes down to is, instead of having servers that are run by major corporations, you have the server resources provided by the individual. And what that means is, you know, instead of having a single server or a bunch of servers run by a large company, you empower individuals, regular people that have computers sitting at home or at the office. They turn on their computer runs some special software, and now their computer becomes one of possibly thousands or even millions of nodes that collaboratively provide the same services that those cloud computers used to provide. But now you've eliminated many different points of weakness And, you know, you've basically increased four different areas. I look at four metrics: security, performance, reliability, and scalability. These are the four areas that most decentralized technologies and a lot of blockchains provide as value that I think that any person should, you know, take very seriously.
Yeah, okay. And if I am to, so what I want to understand is, right, I've got several computers here in my office. I'm a trader, so, you know, I've got to have backups for backups. I've got radiation probably pouring out of these screens for like a mad dog, but it is what it is for me to be a trader. If I have space on my computer, for example, and I decide to plug into the Blue Zone network, is that going to slow down my operating? Is it going to be detrimental to my day-to-day, or is it just going to use the spare space? How does that work? Because one of the hurdles that I got to get around is, okay, if I was to be on this network, if I was to be sort of renting out my space, my data space, whatever, however you want to put that, will that slow anything down, or do you choose how much you use? How does that work? How do you make me feel happy that I'm not going to slow my life down by being a part of the network?
Yeah, that's a great question. And frankly, there's different answers to that depending on what kind of decentralized tech you're using. In general, you really have to look at what you're using your machine for. If you're, you know, running a Bitcoin miner or an Ethereum miner on your machine, let's analyze that. What is your machine actually doing? Well, it's running a piece of software that's trying to mine blocks from the network. It's taking quite a bit of space. That's actually one of the challenges of blockchain. And I can talk about that with you, you know, later if that comes up. But it's a major problem because, you know, you end up filling up your hard drive and you end up with your CPU being used quite a bit. I don't really think that running a Bitcoin miner or Ethereum miner really uses up your network very much in the long run. But, you know, the other two issues, you will notice slowdowns. When your hard drive starts to get full, most operating systems will slow down. If you're running a miner, it's going to take a lot of CPU. It will slow your machine down. So no doubt there's going to be something you'll notice. One of the things about Blue Zell's database, which makes it unique, is we're not really heavily using your CPU. It's not a CPU intensive task. It's quite lightweight. Also, in terms of disk space, you get to decide how much space gets used. And frankly, it's not a lot of space. Blue Zell is not a blockchain. It uses blockchain-like technology, but because it's not a blockchain, it benefits from the fact that it's not taking up nearly as much space as would be taken if you were running a Bitcoin mining node. So, you know, the impact on your machine, if you're participating as a farmer, and that's the term we use in Blue Zell, if you're interacting with a node, is quite low. It's not zero, but in my opinion, it's low enough that it's not significant. It's nothing that would have a heavy impact. You know, the flip side is, you know, a lot of people leave their machines running. They have them running when they're at work. They'll have them at home, running at home. Their computers are idling. That's an opportunity you have. That's something that you can take advantage of, where instead of just having that computer running and, you know, using up electricity unnecessarily, you can monetize that to some extent by becoming a farmer node.
Okay, and is the currency of Blue Zell the Blue Zell token?
That's right. It's the Blue Zell token. It's what we launched in mid-January.
Okay. No, I think you've answered the question quite well. I mean, I'm not mining from these computers. These computers that I have here are for business. They're for trading. They're for running my business. There's no mining going on. If I have mining rigs, I'll buy mining rigs elsewhere. So in that respect, I can decide how much I'm going to use. Is there any tools for optimizing that so I can work out how much I can use without it slowing things down, or is that sort of just up to me?
You know what? Right now, it's a bit early in the game. I mean, I think that eventually, you know, Blue Zell's building up to have an ecosystem where there will be tools to answer this question. I mean, if you look at, for example, mining right now, which is a much more developed ecosystem, you can go to these websites that will, you know, basically tell you which cryptocurrencies to mine, what are the best resources to have. They even talk about the cost of electricity, and they can help you determine, you know, the return on your investment. In the same vein, there will be offerings of services like that to help you determine what's the best way to approach with Blue Zell. But again, we're not, you know, doing things like proof of work, which are very CPU intensive. It's a much more lightweight approach to the use of your resources. So I really like it because it's low impact. It still provides you with a great financial incentivization to participate, but you don't have to worry so much about the impact it's going to have on your machine. And, you know, in an ideal world, you can use your machine for your regular day-to-day, and you can use our software at the same time and notice little or no impact.
So what's your, I mean, look, I love the idea. I want to know what your end goal is. I mean, everyone's got, you know, a lot of the time when I speak to guests, I'll ask them, what's a win for you? Like, at what point do you get to the stage where you go, oh, we did it. We have done it. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to continue to develop and grow and, you know, adapt and create new things. But at what point are you and your team going to sort of feel like we've achieved what we set out to achieve? Like, what does that look like for Bluzel and your objectives? Like, what does a win look like is what I'm getting at. What's your end goal?
Well, you know, if you look at the Web 2.0 world, and if I were to ask you as a developer, what is the database of choice? You know, there might be a few answers, maybe Oracle or MySQL. Or SQL Server or MongoDB. In the database and the decentralized world, there is no de facto database right now. Our real goal initially, a short-term goal, is to be the de facto database for the decentralized world. So if you're building a dApp, whether it's on Ethereum or Neo, or you're building a decentralized app that uses Bitcoin, Bluzel should be the database that you go to. There should be no questions about it. That's the de facto standard. We're aiming ourselves to be that database. So, you know, when companies are talking about database or building a software and they need to discuss what's that database layer, we want to be that obvious answer. And, you know, it's still early in the game. You know, there's different players, even for file storage, for example. There's different players for CPU. There's different players even for which blockchain to use. So we're positioning ourselves to be the player in the database field. And, you know, more longer term goal is beyond just decentralization. I mean, you know, I look at Bluzel as a better database, not just for dApps, but also for the, you know, the Web 2.0 world, the world of enterprises that, you know, have accounting software, have payroll, have video games, have entertainment, any of those spaces, they're currently using databases. Bluzel is a better database. And I see that our secondary longer term goal is that we have a disruptive role in the Web 2.0 space, such that those databases are now being pushed aside for ours.
Yeah, okay. So lofty goals, as everyone in the space has, and so we should. I mean, look, there's so much we can achieve here. We're still at the early days, and the technology is really ramping, and it's extraordinarily exciting. You mentioned it's open source, okay? So, of course, there's going to be community involved. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what the community is doing, how they're getting involved, what you need to see more of, if you need help in any areas? Like, if you could explain that community that Bluzel has, I'd really appreciate that, just to get a better understanding for it.
Absolutely. So, you know, I have benefited personally from the open source and free software movement. You know, I started working with Linux and open source software in the 90s, so I'm a big fan of it. And that's basically a spirit I brought to the company. Our Bluzel database is licensed under AGPL v3, which is a free software license. And when I say free, talk about freedom. So really what it means is, you know, you can take the Bluzel code, you can fork the code, you can make changes to it. But if you're offering the same code back, you know, offering the service back to the public, you're required to put your code back into the community. You have to share all your changes back. So that's a fantastic ecosystem that I really believe in, because it fosters improvements from the community, but it also gives the responsibility that if you're benefiting off of the shoulders of previous developers who contributed to the open source community, you need to contribute back. And so that's why we took this license up. One of our advisors is actually Brian Fox, who was one of the earlier members of the Free Software Foundation that's really spearheading free software and open source. So, you know, in terms of community, it's really important for Bluzel that, you know, our team is not just Bluzel employees, but also members of the open source community that contribute. And what I mean by this is there's several different ways. You know, our software is visible to the public on GitHub. We encourage people to look at our code, download it, build it. If they see there's bugs, for them to report bugs, maybe even fix the bugs and submit those as requests that we can approve. One of the other areas is just the ecosystem of building extensions and modules. For example, you know, we want support in Bluzel so that developers from, say, C# or PHP or Python, Ruby, they can all use our database without any difficulty. And in order for that to happen, extensions have to be built, and that's quite a bit of an effort. You know, we've already in the last, you know, month and a half had several contributions coming in from the public for support for all these languages. And, you know, that's something we really are excited about and we encourage. And we also want to put bounties out to encourage open source developers to contribute. So I think that the open source is a really important ingredient for Bluezelle to proceed and be successful. And, you know, we're definitely doing our part to encourage it.
Well, you mentioned the last month or so, and that was my next point really to get into, because I know that through the month of May, you were sort of testing everything out and going to your community and whatnot. And I think you've got you've named it Lovelace launch at the end of June. Is everything still on target? Is it all still going according to plan? I'm not suggesting that anything's gone wrong. I'm just, you know, things, you learn things, especially when you put it out to the public and you get feedback and you see what's going on. Are you still on schedule for the June or end of June release?
Absolutely, yeah. We're on track. I mean, we obviously have an ambitious project and, you know, it keeps us on our toes, but we're definitely, you know, on schedule to have our product out. And, you know, we might even have some, you know, like I said, some open source developed products come out with it, for example. So I don't want to make any promises at this point, but definitely whatever we've talked about is coming. And, you know, indeed, you know, we are an agile team. As we notice and learn things from the community based on needs and requirements, things can change. So, you know, there's always a possibility with a roadmap that we might reprioritize and move things around and possibly introduce new features based on demand. And that's just a requirement if you're any kind of company that, you know, is highly public and, you know, has a large developer community.
Now, you mentioned that there might be something coming out around the release date. Are you able to elaborate anything at all there for us?
Well, let me just say that, you know, right now we have JavaScript support. We've already promised Solidity support from Ethereum and Neo support, so that if you're writing smart contracts in either one of those environments, you can use our database. We're expecting to be able to provide support for at least one other programming language beyond the ones we've promised already to come in sync with our June end release. We just haven't really clearly stated which one that is, and that's something we want to leave as a bit of a surprise.
Okay, so that's your little trick up your sleeve for the end of June likely release date, something along those lines, yeah, without saying too much more, correct?
Exactly.
Well, that's good. We like to get a scoop here. We like to give the listeners a little bit more information. Of course, a lot of listeners here, I am a trader, I am an investor, and I talk to projects from a perspective of the business side of things. I want to, first of all, understand the business, and then I want to understand why I should be investing. And it does help by having these conversations. And a lot of the people that are listening right now will be sitting here listening going, does that make sense? Should I buy some? That is literally a lot of the conversations that are being had within the different communities that I've set up and that we have running. So it's good to know a little bit more about it, and also some of the little carrots that get dangled ahead, they tend to do quite well. So Raj, one more thing. I ask each of my guests, okay, the different, we compare the internet, or get the internet compared a lot to blockchain and this new space, okay? You know, 1993 is not when the internet was born, but it was when it started to sort of get implemented, used, and do, you know, a fair bit of commerce was starting to go on. And in 2000, you know, the wheels fell off a little bit, things got a little bit hectic. Great companies still come through, of course, and we have what we've got today as far as the internet's ecosystem. Whereabouts do you think we are, 1993, 2000, in that space between those years for blockchain at the moment? What do you think?
You know, that's a great question. You know, I just came back from New York. I went to three wonderful conferences, and, you know, I'm just going to state it like it is. There's quite a bit of noise right now. There's a lot of companies that are talking about wonderful things. There's a lot of token sales. There's a lot of smart people talking, and there's a lot of stuff going on. So it's really difficult to kind of gauge, you know, which are the real projects, which ones are the ones going to be left standing after a correction, and which ones are not. I was around in 2000, 1999. I was in Silicon Valley. I got to experience some of the craze around the dot-coms that was happening at the time. You know, I'm not an expert on it, but, you know, it feels a bit to me like something like 1999, 2000, which, you know, is not the rosiest picture considering, you know, what happened in 2001. But I think, like any kind of disruptive technology or even bubble, you know, that correction is necessary for things to just sober up and settle down, and for maturity to come into play. And I think that that's something that's going to happen. Is it going to happen on the same schedule that we experienced in the early 21st century? I don't know.
So because there seems to be two things. Like there's the hype, right? So there's a lot of hype that comes and goes around this space. We know that we saw it at the end of last year. And then there's the technology. It appears that the hype's ahead of the technology. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I being a scientist, when I meet any kind of people at any kind of event who are talking about what they're doing, the hype is, you know, making the claims that I just split the atom or, you know, I created the most amazing consensus algorithm that solves every problem that blockchains have. But then, you know, when you start getting into the questions about, well, how do you actually achieve it? What's the magic sauce? That's when I often run into a brick wall where I don't get answers. And either, you know, there is some sort of trade secrets or the guys just haven't really figured that out and they're just making claims. And my concern is the latter, that those claims are being made, but they're not justified. So, you know, I feel that there's a lot of that going on right now. And, you know, it's just going to be a matter of time, really, when we kind of know what, you know, what's real and what's not.
That's it. Well, the rubber's got to hit the road at some point coming up very soon. But Niraj, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show, mate. I do understand what you're trying to achieve. I wish you the best of luck. It sounds like you're coming from a very grounded place with a brilliant idea. And I hope to see the launch in June go exceptionally well. And look, one thing I want to ask for the viewers, or listeners, I should say, is where can they find out more information about the project?
You know, the best place to go as decentralized as we are is bluezel.com. It's our webpage. It's a fantastic resource. There's also our blog, which you can link to from bluezel.com, which would take you to something called the Blueprint, which has a list of all the blogs that Bluezel has put out. You know, we have a very active community of people in the community company that are putting out blogs about various topics. Some of them are related to the database. Some of them are more decentralized in general nature. So I definitely encourage people to check out both resources. We also have a very active community schedule where, you know, myself and other members of the team go to conferences. We go to meetups. We do presentations. We also have hosted two hackathons. So I think it's an excellent opportunity for members of the public, if they want to be involved or connected, to look at that schedule and if it's possible for them to be able to attend these events either in person or virtually.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that. Get out there, find more information. If you're sniffing around events, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you look for Bluezel as a project to go and have a chat with Niraj and his team. Big things coming out of this space. Big things for Bluezel at the end of June. You heard it here first on the Trader Cobb Crypto Show, brought to you by TraderCobb.com. Jump across to the website and register there. Thank you so much, Niraj, for being on the show. I really appreciate your time, and I wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you, Craig. It was a pleasure.
The Trader Cobb Crypto Podcast. Check out TraderCobb.com because experience matters.